Skies will begin to clear this afternoon, and the wind will diminish as the low pushes off to the east. Temperatures, however, will remain below average. The next system will move into the area tomorrow. A mix of snow and rain is expected across the region, with some accumulation in west-central Illinois and northeastern Missouri. More snow is possible Saturday night. High temperatures today will range from the low 30s across southern Wisconsin and northern Indiana to the upper 40s across southern Missouri and western Kentucky. Low temperatures overnight will range from the mid-teens across southern Wisconsin and southern Michigan to the mid-30s across central Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, decreasing clouds, the high 42, and the wind from the north at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy and cold with a low of 22 and the wind from the northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, cloudy with a chance of rain or snow in the afternoon. The high, 38, the wind out of the northeast from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Friday night, cloudy with a low of 28. Saturday, cloudy with a chance of afternoon rain or snow and a high of 38. Saturday night, cloudy with a chance of snow and a low in the upper 20s. Sunday, partly sunny with a high in the upper 30s. Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-20s. And the outlook for Monday, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 40s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana were mostly in the 30s, most locations reporting cloudy skies, although there was some clearing in northwestern Illinois. In Rockford, it was partly sunny and 33. O'Hare, cloudy, 30. Bloomington, 34. Springfield reported some flurries at the top of the hour, 37 degrees there. Mattoon, 33. Carbondale, 37. At South Bend, 33. Lafayette, 35. Indianapolis reported 34 degrees and light snow. And Terre Haute, 35. Willard Airport reported 35 degrees at the top of the hour. The dew point, 25. The relative humidity, 66%. The wind out of the north at 16, giving us a wind chill of 25. The barometric pressure, 30.13, and steady. And at 12:40, 37 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The United Auto Workers Union met in Detroit this week to prepare for contract negotiations this summer with Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors. Each of the big three automakers is in better shape now than when they last signed labor contracts in 2007. With positive news for the car companies, the UAW says it's a good time for them to negotiate. NPR's Sonari Glinton was at the union's convention and sent this report.
The UAW's meeting was held against the backdrop of recent fights between public sector workers, especially in Ohio and Wisconsin, and their governors. Here's UAW head Bob King speaking to union leaders.
They're putting the same agenda in all these state houses across the country. So it's incumbent on us as labor to come together and have a common strategy of how we're going to fight them.
Figuring out that strategy was part of what union leaders talked about. But the real subject was upcoming contract negotiations. The UAW's Bob King says recent good news for the car companies should mean good news for their workers.
Now, you always want the companies to be doing well when you're going to negotiations. You're in much better shape. You can do more for your membership when the companies are doing well.
I think that is sort of pie in the sky.
Sean McElinden with the Center for Automotive Research says the union is unlikely to win back major concessions, and their leaders know it.
The automotive market hasn't fully recovered by any means and is facing still a number of high-risk factors like higher gasoline prices or part shortages.
McElinden says how things go will largely depend on where gas prices and the economy are when negotiations begin in earnest this summer. Sonari Glinton, NPR News, Detroit.
One of the most dangerous times of day for teenagers is after school. That is especially true in the gang-infested neighborhoods of Chicago, where police and school officials are using federal stimulus funds to try to better protect kids on their way to and from school through a program called Safe Passage. NPR's David Shaper reports.
Like a lot of parents, Greta Campbell often worries about her 17-year-old daughter, a senior at Chicago's Hyde Park Academy High School on the city's south side, especially right after school.
My daughter does walk up and down these streets, And I'm really concerned about the crime and the violence that's happening these days with our youth.
Campbell notes it's not just mom who's concerned, but says her daughter worries too.
Especially since she knew a little boy that was shot and killed here, and that really hit hard. So that really got next to her after her friend was killed here. So she does have a lot of concern walking back and forth to school.
Such concerns are nothing new and actually date back decades, as getting to and from school in Chicago and other cities has been sometimes perilous for young people. But after-school violence in Chicago began to increase a few years ago when this Board of Education closed several schools and students began having to walk through different neighborhoods to get to new schools. Thomas Trotter is principal of Hyde Park Academy.
If you're a kid growing up in Chicago and you travel from Englewood to Woodlawn, you go through different gang territories. So they're a little bit alert or on edge in terms of making sure they get here safely and get back home safely. So that's always a concern.
After the brutal street fight between teens from opposing neighborhoods after school one day in September of 2009 was captured on cell phone video and went viral, showing the world the beating death of honor student Darian Albert, Chicago police and school officials ramped up what they call safe passage.
We've established unprecedented relationships with the Chicago public schools.
That's former Chicago Police Superintendent Jody Weiss, who just stepped down this month. He says high school principals and other school officials now meet regularly with their area police commanders and call police right away when they see trouble start.
If the school officials notice that there's a problem brewing in the school, now that information is passed informally, immediately, over the telephone to our command staff, and then we can take those measures necessary to curb the violence should that problem continue on out into the community.
And school and police officials have beefed up security, especially at the end of the school day. At 2:36 in the afternoon, the dismissal bell rings, and most of the 1,800 or so students here at Hyde Park Academy head toward and out the high school's main front entrance under the watchful eye of at least a half a dozen security guards. Once outside, the students are greeted by a heavy police presence, including a handful of blue and white Chicago police SUVs and squad cars, and close to a dozen police officers who keep them moving along to their buses, to waiting rides, or on their walk home. A police helicopter often flies over potential hotspots for after-school violence around the city, and tactical police units can be moved to certain schools or neighborhoods in anticipation of possible fights or shootings based on tips from gang and school-based intelligence. But the ex-superintendent Weiss acknowledges that such a heavy police presence can be jarring, especially in communities where many kids don't trust police.
We don't want to live in a police state. And I think whenever we can gain the cooperation of the community working with the police, we have a very viable deterrent to gang violence.
So the Chicago public school system is spending nearly $5 million this year to contract with community groups and other nonprofits to provide people from the neighborhoods to stand guard and stand watch along the routes students take to and from school in the city's most dangerous neighborhoods.
How's your team? You got your count? Okay.
In an unused classroom at Hyde Park High School, Herman Rainey is gathering with his group called Leave No Veteran Behind about an hour before dismissal time. Retired or out-of-work veterans, along with a few parents, are paid about $10 an hour for a few hours before and after school to stand watch on corners and side streets looking for signs of trouble.
We're gonna post up on our locations at 2:20.
Group leaders go over the locations the dozen or so teams of two will be dispatched to. They run down any information they get from school staff or police about what they need to watch out for, from certain gang tensions to suspicious vehicles.
That's a radio check.
And they're handed two-way radios so they can quickly communicate trouble if they see it.
So I'm ready to go. It's time to go. Yeah, it's time to roll out.
Herman Rainey leads the group of mostly middle-aged and older veterans through the school hallway and out the front door about 15 minutes before the bell. Once outside, they fan out along certain routes a few blocks away from the school to various corners and potential trouble spots students will be passing through, such as this long railroad viaduct along 63rd Street.
You know, you can get mugged in broad daylight in here.
Bernard Cooks is posted at one end of the viaduct, watching younger children coming from a nearby elementary school cross paths with the teenagers coming from the high school. He says his job is to simply observe and report. Those who work on safe passage at Hyde Park Academy and other public high schools across the city are advised to not get physically involved if trouble does break out. But there's little doubt some of these veterans could get physical if necessary. Cook served 4 years each in the Army and in the Air Force in the 1980s. But he says he's not there to be part of a show of force. Instead, he says he and the other veterans want to let the kids know that they're there and they've got their back.
We're here faithfully. We've been here since day one. Our intention is to be here to the last day. So kids can figure out that, hey, there's somebody that actually cares about our safety, and they can feel confident going up and down these streets.
The principal of Hyde Park Academy High School, Thomas Trotter, says he likes the quiet, calming presence provided by the guys from Leave No Veteran Behind.
Yeah, I think it's some power in silence. I think it's some power in silence. They don't say a lot. They just watch. They don't get in the way. They just watch. And it's amazing, because in the mornings I come early and I see those guys there, and it's almost like they're there, but they're not there.
Trotter says the kids certainly have taken notice. He says the number of after-school fights and other incidents around Hyde Park Academy have dropped substantially since the veterans have been providing safe passage. But there are those concerned that responses such as safe passage with a heavy police or adult presence in some areas only push violent activity further away and address only the symptoms of youth violence and not the causes. David Chaper, NPR News, Chicago.
For more information about Safe Passage, visit NPR's website, npr.org.
I've been a part of WILL Book Mentor Project for the last 2 years and Read to My Son classroom for the last 2 years. Normally when I walk in, they all run to me and hug me. It's a feeling that I never had in my life. And the reason I'm doing this is because I want him to grow up and do the same thing when he has his own kids. My name is Shoni Coleman. WILL is my source for opportunities to interact with my son and other children.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 24th of March, 2011. It's the birthday of the poet Lawrence Ferlinghetti, born in Yonkers, New York, 1919. His father, an Italian immigrant, died before the boy was born. His mother was committed to an asylum when he was still an infant. An aunt in France took custody of him, moved him to France, then back to New York. Joined the Navy during World War II, was the commander of a ship, studied at the Sorbonne, and then settled in San Francisco, where in 1953 he opened City Lights Bookstore. It's the birthday of the hymn writer Fanny Crosby, born in New York, 1820.